WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In anticipation of the Democratic and Republican conventions, this week we're featuring interviews about presidential history and politics. The Obama and McCain campaigns are spending a fortune on TV ads that are analyzed on talk shows and news shows. How did TV ads become so important? We're going to listen back to some of the most influential campaign ads, starting with the first campaign that used them, Eisenhower versus Stevenson in 1952. You don't hear jingles like this anymore.
I for president, I for president, I for president, I for president. You like Ike, I like Ike. Everybody likes Ike
for president.
Hang out the banner, beat the drum. We'll take Ike to Washington.
We don't want John
or Dean
or Harry.
Let's do that big job right. Just get in step with the guy that's hep. Get in step with Ike. You like Ike.
That ad is included in an internet exhibit about the history of TV presidential campaign ads called The Living Room Candidate. It was launched by the American Museum of the Moving Image in New York during the 2004 presidential campaign. It collects over 250 ads from every election between 1952 and 2004. The exhibition is still online at livingroomcandidate.org and will be updated in September. David Schwartz is the museum's curator of film and is the co-curator of The Living Room Candidate. I spoke with him in 2004. Whose idea was it to do a campaign ad in the Eisenhower, in the Eisenhower campaign crew?
It was Madison Avenue's idea. There was an advertising man named Russell Reeves, his earlier claim to fame was the M&M melts in your mouth, not in your hands campaign. And it was really his strategy to produce these 20-second ads. He thought they would be very effective. He thought they could reach a lot of people. The Stevenson campaign made a very interesting choice, and it was a big mistake that year with their TV strategy. They purchased half-hour time slots, a series of 18 time slots between 10:30 and 11 o'clock at night, where Stevenson would go on the air and do speeches, half-hour speeches. Now, it sounded like a good idea at the time, and he was a very good speaker, had great oratorical skills. The problem was that the only people who were really tuning in to watch these half-hour speeches were people who already were going to vote for Stevenson. The strategy with the Eisenhower spot ads was they could go on to popular TV shows like I Love Lucy and catch a captive audience that was already there.
Let's listen to another Eisenhower ad, also from 1952, in which a woman expresses her concern about high prices. Before we actually hear this ad, set it up for us. What's happening visually?
Each of these ads, this is the Eisenhower Answers America spot, consists of two shots. The first shot in the ad, and I think of these commercials as short movies, and this is a very short movie. You see an ordinary person, in this case, a woman is concerned about the high cost of living, high prices. And they ask a question of Eisenhower. And the person who's asking the question is filmed from above, the camera sort of looking down at them. And then we cut to Eisenhower. And in those shots, the camera is looking up at Eisenhower, so he looks kind of heroic. And he answers the question of the ordinary person. So he's connecting with the voter.
Okay, so here we are, an ad for the Eisenhower campaign in 1952.
Eisenhower Answers America.
You know what things cost today. High prices are just driving me crazy.
Yes, my mammy gets after me about the high cost of living. It's another reason why I say it's time for a change. Time to get back to an honest dollar and an honest dollar's worth.
A couple of things I find really interesting about that 1952 mm-hmm. Eisenhower ad. One is that they both absolutely sound like they're reading the script for the first time. They're not very good at acting the part of being themselves.
No. Well, they filmed about 40 of these commercials in one day. They basically took Eisenhower into a studio in Midtown Manhattan and set him up in front of a bunch of gigantic cue cards where they had the scripts. And Eisenhower was a little bit uncomfortable doing this. At one point, probably about halfway through the session, he said, it's kind of a shame that an old soldier should have to come to this. And he was just reading these answers off of big cue cards. And he was a little bit stiff, perhaps, but probably not as stiff as Stevenson came across in his TV appearances. But the commercials look kind of crude. Eisenhower's answers were filmed separately from these ordinary people who were rounded up in front of Radio City Music Hall and brought in after Eisenhower's answers were filmed.
Oh, wow.
Ordinary people were brought in to ask their questions.
So was this, you know, quote, ordinary people ad effective?
It's hard to say if this ad was determinative in the election. Eisenhower would have won this election almost under any circumstances. It was a landslide election. But I think it was effective because the Eisenhower campaign spent about $1 million putting their ads on TV, or actually close to $2 million. The Stevenson campaign only spent about $77,000 in TV ads that year. In 1956, when there was a rematch of Eisenhower versus Stevenson, Stevenson decided to do his own series of ads called The Man from Libertyville, and he appeared on television. So after 1952, it was evident that candidates would have to do these commercials and style themselves as TV stars, even though they were reluctant, even though Stevenson and Eisenhower both were kind of reluctant to become TV actors, they realized they had to do it.
Now, Kennedy was John F. Kennedy was very telegenic. Mm. What were his TV ads like?
John Kennedy's TV ads really reflected the spontaneity and freshness of his campaign. He was great on television. Of course, it's very well known that the debates, that he looked much better than Richard Nixon in the debates. He was a lot fresher and more spontaneous. And the spontaneity of the campaign was captured by documentary film cameras. At the time, in 1960, filmmakers were starting to use lightweight portable cameras. And often, Kennedy's campaign appearances were filmed. Cameras would follow him follow him around making speeches, follow him into people's living rooms. There's one ad that we have on our site, which is Kennedy in an ordinary living room talking to average voters. It's really the personality and freshness of the Kennedy campaign came across in his TV ads.
This is the Sills family. Recently, John F. Kennedy visited the Sills.
Mr. and Mrs. Sills are facing one of the great problems that all American families are now facing, and that is the great increase in the cost of living.
Our rent has gone up, our food, our cleaning of our clothing, buying of the clothing, our gas and electric, and our telephone bills have gone up.
What's been your experience, Mr. Sills, as far as keeping those two daughters of yours going?
We're very concerned with their future. We would like both of them to go to college.
Have you been able to put much aside as far as...
No, unfortunately, not right now.
One of the things which I think has increased the cost of living has been this administration's reliance upon a high interest rate policy. My own judgment is that we're going to have to try to do a better job in this field.
Yes, we can do better. But to do so, we must elect the man who cares about America's problems. We must elect John F. Kennedy, president.
That's a TV ad from John Kennedy's campaign in 1960. Let's skip ahead to a 1964 ad from the Johnson campaign against Barry Goldwater. Now, it's very famous, but it was only run once as a paid political ad. Would you describe what's happening visually in this ad, and then we'll play the audio?
The visuals are, again, two very simple shots that are juxtaposed. The ad starts off with an image of a young girl who looks like she's 5 or 6 years old, and she's in a field picking petals off of a daisy and counting up to 10. And that's the first shot. And as she approaches 10, the camera zooming in, and it closes in on her eye. And then we start to hear an ominous voice, a countdown to a nuclear explosion. And the ad actually ends with an image of a huge mushroom cloud and a nuclear explosion.
Okay, let's hear the audio from this 1964 ad by the LBJ campaign.
Stakes to make a world in which all of God's children can live or to go into the dark. We must either love each other or we must die.
Vote for President Johnson on November 3rd. The stakes are too high for you to stay home.
It's probably the first and the last time that nuclear apocalypse was used in a campaign ad. Why was this ad taken off the air after one run?
Well, this was a very effective ad because it really played on the fear that Barry Goldwater could get us into a nuclear war. Now, supposedly, Johnson was reluctant to run this ad. It was pretty over the top in a way because what it was saying was that if you vote for Barry Goldwater, the world could come to an end. I mean, that's pretty extreme even for an attack ad. And it was controversial. As soon as the ad aired, it was shown during a movie of the week broadcast of the movie David and Bathsheba. As soon as it aired, the switchboards lit up at the White House and also at the network, and there were a lot of complaints from the Goldwater campaign that this ad was just unfair. Now, what's interesting is that Barry Goldwater's name is never even mentioned in the ad, but the public really knew that he had made some extreme statements at the convention that year. He said that extremism and the defense of liberty is no vice, and he had advocated the possible use of nuclear weapons in Vietnam, tactical nuclear weapons. So this ad really played into that fear. But the Johnson campaign tried this ad out, and they had a lot of other attack ads that they had also made. But what happened was the ad instantly went from a paid advertisement to a major news story. So as soon as the Goldwater campaign complained about it, the network news broadcast started replaying the ad and talking about it. And so the Johnson campaign didn't have to pay for it anymore to be on the air. It became a news story.
My guest is David Schwartz. He co-curated the Internet exhibition of presidential campaign ads for the American Museum of the Moving Image. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is David Schwartz. He co-curated an Internet exhibit of presidential TV campaign ads for the American Museum of the Moving Image. Let's move on to an ad from 1980 for the Reagan campaign against the incumbent Jimmy Carter. And I was really surprised to see this ad. I don't remember this one from television, but it's an ad featuring Nancy Reagan sitting in a chair and talking. Describe what's happening visually in this ad, and then we'll play it.
Well, we see Nancy Reagan. She's dressed in red. She looks like a conventional image of a candidate's spouse, a potential first lady in this case, and she's just talking directly to the camera. So we seem to be being set up for a sort of upbeat, positive ad where we're going to hear from the candidate's wife, maybe about how great her husband is.
Okay, here's Nancy Reagan in 1980.
I deeply, deeply resent and am offended by the attacks that President Carter has made on my husband, the personal attacks that he's made on my husband, his attempt to paint my husband as a man he is not. He is not a warmonger. He is not a man who is going to throw the elderly out on the street and cut out their Social Security. That's a terrible thing to do and to say about anybody. That's campaigning on fear. There are many issues that are at stake in this campaign. I would like Mr. Carter to explain to me why the inflation is as high as it is, why unemployment is as high as it is. I would like to have him explain the vacillating, weak foreign policy so that our friends overseas don't know what we're going to do, whether we're going to stand up for them or whether we're not going to stand up for them. And the issue of this campaign is his 3.5-year record.
The time is now for strong leadership.
It's Nancy Reagan in 1980, a campaign ad for her husband. Did she have to be convinced to do this ad, do you know?
Oh, I don't know. I think that Nancy Reagan was quite happy to be an attack dog for her husband. She was very strong and outspoken. And the idea of the 1980 campaign was to let other people do the dirty work and have Reagan come across as a nice guy, you know, saying, there you go again in the debate to Jimmy Carter, being affable. So I think Nancy was quite happy to do some of the dirty work in this ad.
Was this ad effective? Do you know?
I think this is a very effective ad because it does a really neat trick. It starts off as a defense of her husband. It's Nancy defending her husband from attack. And then halfway through the ad, she turns it around and she goes on the attack against Jimmy Carter. And she's lecturing him. She's saying, you know, I want Jimmy Carter to answer to me. I mean, that's a pretty amazing way to talk to the president of the United States. And I think some of the best politicians, the real masters of the form, know how to sort of start off seeming nice and then go on the attack. And the whole 1980 campaign, the Reagan campaign against Carter, really had to attack Jimmy Carter as president. You know, when you have an incumbent president, you really have to convince the country that they've done a bad job or that they should be replaced. So I think this ad really, really did that trick.
Now, the most famous political campaign of the Reagan era was the Morning in America ad, which is, I think it's fair to say, one of the more famous political ads in political ad history. This was in the 1984 re-election campaign. Again, I'm going to ask you to describe what's happening visually before we hear it.
Basically, we're seeing a montage of images. It's almost like a moving Norman Rockwell painting. We're seeing a sort of white picket fence series of shots of people in a small suburban town going about their business. It's very upbeat and positive. We don't see Ronald Reagan in the ad. And when you, if you're just watching the ad, it could be for almost anything. It could be an ad for an insurance company, a beverage, any kind of product. It's an upbeat, positive-looking idealized view of America.
Okay, let's hear it now. And this is the Morning in America ad for the Reagan campaign in 1984.
It's morning again in America. Today, more men and women will go to work than ever before in our country's history. With interest rates at about half the record highs of 1980, nearly 2,000 families today will buy new homes, more than at any time in the past 4 years. This afternoon, 6,500 young men and women will be married. And with inflation at less than half of what it was just 4 years ago, they can look forward with confidence to the future. It's morning again in America. And under the leadership of President Reagan, our country is prouder and stronger and better. Why would we ever want to return to where we were less than 4 short years ago?
The Reagan campaign 1984 Morning in America ad. 4 years after the Reagan ad that we just heard, Michael Dukakis took out an ad saying that he had it with George H.W. Bush's misleading ads. What was Dukakis reacting against?
Dukakis was reacting against a number of really strong attack ads. The 1988 campaign was very, very nasty. The Bush campaign that year was headed by Roger Ailes. And Dukakis was in very solid shape after the Democratic convention, about 17 points up in the polls. And the ads were just very, very strong. It was a classic campaign where the Republicans tried to paint the Democrat as a weak Massachusetts liberal. And there was one ad in particular that really got Dukakis upset, where he was, they used a photo opportunity where Dukakis was riding around in a tank, in a military helmet. I mean, everybody can visualize this ad, I think, because it's been replayed so many times. And the ad ridiculed the idea of Dukakis' commander-in-chief and said that he was going to cut all these important defense programs. Factually, the ad was untrue. I mean, it was making claims that were just plain not true. But it was, what was really effective was this image of Dukakis in a tank and the idea that he would look kind of silly as commander-in-chief.
So let's listen to this 1988 Dukakis ad. And again, before we do, I'm going to ask you to describe what we would be seeing if we were, in fact, watching it.
What we're going to be seeing is an angry Michael Dukakis turning off the TV set after having watched a Bush attack ad against him. And he's in a white shirt, sort of the Harry Truman look, you know, plain speaking, tough guy, tough, angry Democrat. And he's talking directly to the camera, directly to the voter.
Okay, let's hear it in 1988.
I'm fed up with it. Never seen anything like it in 25 years of public life, George Bush's negative TV ads. Distorting my record, full of lies, and he knows it. I'm on the record for the very weapon systems his ads say I'm against. I want to build a strong defense. I'm sure he wants to build a strong defense. So this isn't about defense issues. It's about dragging the truth into the gutter. And I'm not going to let them do it. This campaign is too important. The stakes are too high for every American family. The real question is, will we have a president who fights for the privileged few, or will we have a president who fights for you? George Bush wants to give the wealthiest 1% of the people in this country a new tax break worth $30,000 a year. I'm fighting for you and your family, for affordable housing and health care, for better jobs, for the best education and opportunity for our children. It's a tough fight. I know that. Uphill all the way. But I'm going to keep on fighting, because what I'm fighting for is our future.
A Michael Dukakis campaign ad in 1988. Well, this is a very literal counterattack. I mean, he's watching the TV with the ad against him. He turns it off, says to the audience, this is misleading. They're misrepresenting me. How do you think it played? Do you have any idea if it registered on the American public?
Well, what's really interesting about this ad is that Dukakis had been criticized earlier in the campaign for not responding to attacks. He was being attacked every day by the Bush campaign, and he wasn't fighting back. And then he decided to fight back. And I think the problem with fighting back and being so direct in your response is that you can start to look defensive. And one of the real interesting things when you look at the ads from 1952 to the present is there are some very basic strategies that are used over and over again. The Republicans love to say that they're strong on military and that if you vote for the Democrat, they're going to cut our defense system and they'll be weak. And they love to say that that they're going to cut your taxes. The Democrats love to say we're going to fight for the average person. And that's what you hear in this ad.
Well, David Schwartz, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks a lot. It's been a pleasure.
David Schwartz co-curated an internet exhibit of presidential TV campaign ads for the American Museum of the Moving Image. You can find it at livingroomcandidate.org. The exhibit will be updated in September. Our interview was recorded in 2004. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.